talking to me about the 15 times that Rabbi told me things to be carried. I'm not lying to you. You haven't been here before. Rabbi Senior is the National Director of the Army Base Outreach. Lowry?
Yes.
And how about this?
Good.
And he has been lecturing here. I think we were talking earlier. Probably this is almost coming up on a 2-year anniversary from the first lecture that he gave. Today's lecture is entitled "Bearers of the Torch."
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Bearers of the Torch. I'll tell you, what a nice crowd when the Dallas Cowboys are playing. What competition? Maybe it's because Jews are really not into football so much, maybe that's it. So no Jewish football, but it's not a big Jewish field to go into football. Here we are, we're the year 2000 is coming closer and closer. The effort on the part of the evangelical world to evangelize our people is becoming more and more intensified. Assimilation is gaining, is greater and greater. I see it constantly. I see it. Jewish people, they're proud to be Jewish, but they don't want to look, sound too Jewish. They're cutting the names off, the noses off. I see when I lecture at Hebrew schools, you get these names of kids, you know, I never saw before. Hear names like this, you know, you get names like Tiffany Finkelstein, you know. Nicole Feldman, you know. You know, Crucifix Grossman, where does this come from? Nobody knows. Well, one of the questions I'm asked often, really quite often, is, you know, the year 2000 is approaching, we're less than 800 days away, and people are concerned about the backlash in the year 2001. A lot of people asking you this now, more now, I think, more than ever before. You know, evangelicals believe that the Jewish people in mass need to be brought to Christ in order for Jesus to make that second coming. And this is not the first time that the church has looked at a date and said, this is the date that Jesus is going to make the second coming. It's happened many times, and I've mentioned this in Texas before. I think we were in Plano. And the pattern is disturbing because right before the year 1000, then too, there was an enormous anticipation that Jesus was going to make his second coming then. And a tremendous push to convert the Jewish people to Christianity before then, that Jesus could return. And of course, the year 1000 came and went, and Jesus didn't show, unspeakable atrocities against our nation resulted. Here comes the year 2000. Many people want to know, should we be concerned? I've often said that I think that what we really need to be concerned about is more the economy than the year 2000. Americans don't seem to be, I don't think they really care about Palestinians, they don't care. I think Americans really care about money. They want to have a job. They want to have a stable economy. They want to be able to put a food in their refrigerator. And more importantly, they want to put gasoline in the car. And if that's taken away from them, then we have to be concerned. Remember back in the Carter administration, there was in the Farm Belt in the Midwest, banks were foreclosing. You remember that? And as virulent anti-Semitism simply emerged right out of the Farm Belt, Jewish bankers are closing the farms. It was a very serious issue. And 2020, 60 Minutes did a whole thing on all this anti-Semitism that was now emerging, you know. If we go back to, many of you remember the oil embargo, 1973 war, Nixon supplies Israel, and of course Israel, it was a very difficult war, it was a very frightening war, but Nixon did supply Israel with arms, and as a result it was an oil embargo. The Persian Gulf states all cut off oil to this country, and it was terrible. I remember the anti-Semitism at that time was extraordinary, you know. Support the Arabs, your car doesn't run on bagels. There was a big bumper stickers all over the country. Jews, go home. Jews, go home. That was a tremendous thing. All of people had, Jews, go home. We want oil. We don't want Jews. in the Gazette Telegraph of Colorado at the time, there was a letter sent in to the editor from a Gentile entitled "Jews Go Home." I wanted to read it to you, by William Aiken, not a Jew. "Jews Go Home. Well, now this is nothing new. Never in the past have you ever taken this gentle suggestion to move on. But heaven forbid, suppose just this once you thought that this expression of a few sick people actually expressed the conviction of all the people in this wonderful land of ours, and all of you start to pack your bags and leave for parts unknown. Jews go home. You don't want Jews, we want oil. But before you leave, could you do me a favor? Would you leave behind your formula for the soft vaccine with me before you leave? You wouldn't want to be so heartless as to let my children contract polio, would you? And would you please leave your knack for government and politics and persuasion and literature and your good food? And would you please leave me with the secret for your desire to succeed? And please have pity on us. Please show us the secret to how to develop such geniuses as Einstein and Steinmeier and so many others who have helped us all. After all, we owe you a lot for the atomic bomb, most of our rocket research, and perhaps the fact that we are alive today. Instead, we could have been looking up from our chains and from our graves at Hitler, old but glad, driving slowly by in one of our Cadillacs, had he succeeded in reaching the atom bomb and not us. On your way out, Jews, will you do me another favor? Will you please drop by my house and pick me up too? I'm not sure I could live too well in the land where you are not to be found. For if you were ever to leave, love goes with you. Democracy and morality goes with you. Everything I and my buddies fought for in World War II goes with you. God goes with you. Just pull up in front of my house, slow down and honk, because so help me, I'm going with you too." What is the purpose of the Jewish people? What are we here for? To make great lawyers? Is that our purpose? No. Great businessmen? No. Doctors? Maybe. The word Jew comes from the word Yehuda. Yehuda comes from the word to admit, to testify. That's what we're all about. We are a witness people. We're here to bear testimony to the world about an event that occurred more than 3,300 years ago. You know, I know I'm standing in a room filled with people all over the Dallas Metroplex. We all do different things for a living, right? Some of you are very rich, like this man over here. Some of you not so. Some of you make a big salary. Some of you not so much. But you know, if you want to make a lot of money, you start your own religion. Now there's a lot of money. Religion business, you're not sure, turn on the television, you'll see immediately it's a big business. Now, if you study all the religions that have ever existed on the face of this earth through all the annals of human history, you'll notice that all religions began in either of two ways. Either with a national revelation, or what is referred to as the individual revelation, meaning the claim is either God revealed himself to everyone, to the whole nation, everyone was there, or the individual revelation. God spoke to me, or he spoke to me and eight friends, or he spoke to me and 12, but it was a defined group of people that heard it, and now you should believe it. The only two ways all religions began. Now, if we were going to start our own religion here in this room, and we had to pick on one of those two, choose, one, select one of these two methods of beginning your own religion, which one do you think sounds a little more credible? Which one do you think is just credibility, not plausibility, not feasibility, just on credibility? Which sounds more credible, the national or individual revelation?
National.
Clearly the national revelation, yet there's something remarkable if you study history. Look back. Because you will find there's only one nation that ever made the claim of the national revelation, and that's the nation of Israel. And the question is why? If all of us, a bunch of Jews, are able to agree, this is a big thing, right? For all the Jews, all the Jews are capable of agreeing on this thing, that national revelation is the better, the superior claim that you can make. So why haven't other people made the claim? The answer is very simple, and that is the one claim that you cannot make unless it actually happened, unless it's actually a historical event. You know? Imagine for a moment if we divide up Dallas area into different segments and we start knocking on people's doors. We send out everyone and we tell people as we knock on their doors, they open the doors and say, don't slam it yet. God spoke to us in this room here today. Yeah. And we have a message for you. Is it possible that some people might believe us? Yeah. It's quite possible that if we sound charismatic enough, believable enough, it's quite possible that some people might believe that God spoke to us here in this room today. Yeah. But let's say we change that ever so slightly, and instead we go out and we knock on people's doors, all of us here, we divide up, some of us go to Plano, some of us go to the north, some of us, and we tell our God today revealed himself to everyone, and this is the message. Is anyone going to believe us? No. Because they'll tell you, look, I was watching the Dallas Cowboy game, and during the commercials, nothing happened. The moment you include everyone in the national revelation, the moment you claim everyone in the claim, you immediately reveal yourself as a liar unless it actually happened. I think I've told this story. I was lecturing at Duke University. I was teaching there, and I was speaking about this, and a young man I could see in the back was going like this, nodding his head from right to left, and you could see, you know, it was a lecture, you know, when you're sitting and people in the audience are going like this, you know, the Gehakta Tzaris, this is not a good sign. He looked like he might be a Jewish fellow back there, so I said, yes, what's your problem? He said, Rabbi Singer, you have not proved a thing. Really? I said, why not? He said, isn't it just possible, he said, that the Jews thought they were having a national revelation, but they really weren't. For example, everybody knows that the Jews and the Chinese were very, very close back then. That's right, you know this? Not just we eat in the restaurants. We're very close. And we got some gunpowder, you know, we had bottle rockets going on from behind the mountain over there, right? And not only that, there are theories out there that the ancient Hebrews have access to electricity. Did you ever hear about this? There are batteries, they had electricity, so they had a speaker system going on behind the mountain. This is the Lord your God. And they were passing out a little shivus around the mountains, people a little toasted, you know, the J&B, people were a little tefluggin, they were a little out of it. Yeah. Isn't it possible? See, they had an auditory and visual experience. This is the Lord your God with fireworks going off with the shivus. It's possible, he said, that they thought they were having a national revelation, but indeed they weren't. It was, the whole thing was a hoax. So I said to him, you know, that's a very interesting point. That's a very interesting point. I said, suppose that I'm Moses and you're Joshua. You're my right-hand man. And we pulled it off without a flick. Everything went perfectly. Everyone blew it. Now we're in the basement. The door is locked. We're writing our Bible. That's right. We're very excited about what went on today. And what we'll do is, we'll write in this Bible, this is a one-time event in history. Only you have been shown such an event. No other nation has ever seen a national revelation. We'll say to people in the future, look back. Look back to all the nations that have ever existed, all the religions that have ever been. Has any other nation been seen such a thing, had heard such a thing? Only you. It's a one-time event in history. Should I do that, now that we pulled it off? And he responded immediately. He said what? What did he say? No. He said, don't do it. That's correct. He said, don't do it. Why not? Why is this not a good idea? Right. Because if this guy was smart enough to pull off a national revelation, then he's certainly smart enough to know that if he can do it, somebody else down the pike in 50, 100 years will do the same thing. And the moment another nation even claims a national revelation, you can throw it away in the garbage. We know that only God controls history. So the moment someone else makes the claim of a national revelation, you know that God has nothing to do with this. And then I asked him, if you'll open up your study guides, and then I asked him, tell me, do you have a Bible? Because he didn't, he was Jewish, so the Christian down the aisle had to pass one to him. Oh, good one. Okay. I asked him to open up to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 4, verse 32. I asked him to read. And I just was watching his face as he was reading these words. And now, these words are a letter by the author. We don't know who wrote it. Who wrote the Bible? God, men, the committee? Is it a composite document? Is it, was it given to us at Sinai? When was it written? 3,310 years ago? 2,800 years ago? I asked him to read it because whoever the author is, if somebody wrote it, didn't just pop out of thin air. Somebody wrote this Bible. At a certain point, it was penned. And I asked him to read this. Now, it begins by the words, Ki sha'alno liyomim rishonim. You know what that means? If you will ask about earlier times, about times that have gone past, whoever wrote this document is asking you. By the way, the word there is sha'alno. You know what no means? Please, it's an imperative. Don't sit back. Don't look at the world like a snapshot that here we are, Jews, Christians, Muslims. No. Please look back. Don't look here. Look backwards. If you want to know what happened, shall know. Please ask. Please think. That's what it means to mispalel, hispalel. What does that mean? When someone prays. What does it means to pray, but it really doesn't mean that. Pilel. What does pilel mean? Pilel means to think. That's what it means. Anyone here know how to speak Hebrew? Yeah. Sorry? Lehis. How do you say to dress yourself in Hebrew? Lehit lavesh. Right? To cause yourself reflexive, to cause yourself to dress. Lehis palel means to cause yourself to think. That's what it really means. To think, to consider. Look back. You might inquire about times long past, going back to the time that God created man on earth, exploring one end of the heavens to the other, seeing if anything as great as this has ever happened, or if the like has ever been heard. Has any nation ever heard God speaking out of the fire as you have, and still survived? Has God ever done miracles, bringing one nation out of another with tremendous miracles, signs, wonders, war, and a mighty hand, an outstretched arm, and terrifying phenomena, as God did for you in Egypt before your very eyes? You are the ones who have been shown. This is the words. Ata horeso lodas. You have been shown so that you might know. Interesting, the term there is das, knowledge, not faith. The word there is knowledge, not faith. You know, when we think about knowledge, what do we usually think about? Science, medicine, mathematics, things that you can prove. We think about religion, faith. What is the definition of faith, by the way, if you open up a dictionary? What is the definition of faith? Believing in something without adequate evidence, without empirical evidence. You believe it, but without evidence. What is the definition of knowledge? Something you believe in, but with adequate, with empirical evidence. Torah doesn't say you must have faith, you must... You know, what's interesting is, so people say, what about faith? Faith is important too. Right? And isn't it true that in Genesis chapter 15, Abraham was considered righteous because of his faith? Doesn't it say that? So you see, faith is a good thing. Actually, when Christians bring up Genesis chapter 15, they make the mistake. What does it mean? That Abraham had faith that there was a God? Abraham knew there was a God. God spoke to him. He heard it. He heard it like Dr. Shapiro, line 3. He heard it. There's no question. As a matter of fact, it tells us in Genesis chapter 26, verse 5, why was Abraham chosen to be the father of this great nation? Why? The great seed came out of Abraham. Those loins produce incredible nation. Even produce the Arabs, the Muslims. I believe without question the reason why the Muslims today are true monotheists is because they come from Zera Avram. They come from the seed of Abraham. That's how it was passed down to them. Unfortunately, politically, we don't get along with them. But theologically, it's the least offensive religion in the world, outside of our faith. A Jew can walk into a mosque and daven mincha. It's not a problem. A Jew is not allowed to walk into a church. Zera Avram, it's the seed of Abraham. It lasted there. It stayed with them. The faith is the trusting for the future. If you're in trouble, let's say you get stuck in the airport and your car doesn't start, you need your friend, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, you just arrived in a red-eye flight, and you call your friend up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and you say, and he's half asleep, and you say, do me a favor, I'm here in the airport, and I need someone to take me home, the taxis are on strike, I need your help, right? So do you have faith that your friend exists? Do you have faith that your friend exists? No, you have knowledge that he exists. The faith is that he's going to come through for you. The promise for the future. That's what God is saying. Look back, that's where you get your knowledge. Look forward, that's where you have your faith. That's what faith is. Faith means just have faith that this is true. So what makes you different than Hare Krishna? He has faith too. And why is your faith better? Because you're willing to sacrifice more faith? I remember in Vietnam War, we had what Buddhists, they were putting gasoline on themselves, lighting themselves up, because they believed. You have Muslims in Lebanon and Jerusalem going into a car laden with TNT and will blow themselves up to kill a few Jews. Because they're sure they have faith that they're going to go. Do you think your faith is greater than theirs? Hardly. Faith, everyone has faith. People die for all religions. It's the knowledge that makes us unique. Look back. It's interesting. That is why only the Torah says, you want to know what's true. It's interesting, in the most difficult parts of the Torah, it's called the Tochacha. It's the time, the period. There are two main sections for this in Leviticus chapter 26, Deuteronomy chapter 28. Terrible things it talks about the Jewish people. Very difficult things. It says one day you're going to follow other gods that your fathers didn't know. The Torah says, look at daddy. You remember your grandfather, how he used to put on tefillin every day? So if someone comes along with a religion that is different than daddy, don't follow. The New Testament doesn't say if someone teaches you a form of Christianity that your father didn't know, you shouldn't follow that form of Christianity. Never! You can't. It cannot. You can't do such a thing. No other people could say, look at your father. Remember your Zayda? Did your Zayda, did your grandfather, did he believe in the Trinity?
Never.
So if someone comes along, so he wasn't sure. So if somebody comes along and says, believe in this, so think to yourself, what did my grandfather believe? What did my grandmother believe? You remember that holy woman? You remember how she would prepare Shabbos? You remember how that home would smell on Friday from gefilte fish from challah? There was a Shabbos smell there. You remember that saintly woman? It's different from what your parents believed. Don't follow it. Because only we have a transmission. Many Christians will say, wait, hold on. But I'm a Christian. My father's a Christian. Right? Because does your father claim that his great-great-grandfather was standing there when he received 5,000 loaves of bread, when 5,000 people were fed with loaves of bread and fish? No Christian can make that claim. No Christian will say, I come from a family and we trace ourselves back to those people who saw Jesus walking on water. No! How old are you here? Are some of you here in your 60s, 70s, 50s, 40s? Is there anyone here who's 500 years old, 1,000 years old, 33? Remember how I addressed you today as, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It was really very silly. Ladies and gentlemen. It's arbitrary. What does ladies and gentlemen mean? The truth is that this room is probably half Jew, half Gentile. I should have addressed you that way. Because the Jews in this room are 3,310 years old. You are the witnesses. You are the bearers of the torch. That's why, and you know, people sometimes, I meet Christians, I meet Jews who become Hindus, I meet all kinds of things, and Jews come over to me, you know, and they tell me, well, you know, I had an amazing experience. They tell me this. I had a thing, I prayed to Hare Krishna. Those Jews who get involved in New Age, they're the most elaborate miracles I've ever seen, you know. You know, crystals, I had unbelievable, I floated all over across Brooklyn, there's a whole... Yeah. You know, I prayed to Jesus, you know. It's interesting, in Deuteronomy chapter 13, the Bible addresses this. Our sages have a very important statement. Hafachba v'hafachba kikulaba. Turn it again. It's all there. The Torah addresses this. In Deuteronomy 13, it says, what happens if a prophet or a dreamer of dreams comes over to you, Parshas Re'eh, and offers to show you a sign or a wonder? You know what that means? A sign means he foretells the future. Stock market's going to dip 350 points on Monday. It's going to go back up. Sugar this week. Right? He shows you a miracle. He says, you see this over here? It's gonna... And the sign of the wonder which he told you comes to pass. The miracle happens. But then he says, let's follow other gods that your fathers didn't know. So don't listen to that prophet or dream of Jesus. I have not sent him, declareth the Lord. But that creates a very serious question, a dilemma here. You should all be asking the question, when we get to this parasha, Parshas Re'eh, you should be jumping out of your seats and asking the question, wait, why would God allow a false prophet, why would God allow a false religion to produce what seems to be miraculous experiences? We're not going to get into the fact whether they are or aren't, or whether they're self-deluded, generated or not, to Satan, you know. Yeah. But leave that to the Christians. They're all fighting about this, you know. The Baptists say that the Pentecostals from Satan, self-deluded, it's all, they have no problem. Those are against this whole gifts of the Spirit and so on. So why would God allow all these religions to be producing these seemingly spiritual and miraculous experiences? Why would God do that? What is God the Almighty, blessed be His name? What is He trying to do? What is He doing? He's testing you. I'm only testing you to see if you really love me. If only one nation produces these spiritual, gives you goosebumps, then there's no free will any longer. Many people, July 4th, they stand there, the rockets are flying all over, they get goosebumps. And you start worshiping the United States? No, doesn't mean that. That's why it's very interesting. If you look in your handout, you look down Deuteronomy chapter 13, the Bible continues. It says, if your brother, the son of your mother, your son or your daughter, the wife of your bosom, or your friend, who is right near to you, to your soul, and secretly he entices you, you're in your dorm room, saying, let us go and serve other gods which you have not known, neither you nor your fathers, of the gods of the people which are all around you, near to you, far from you. What does it say? You shall not consent to him nor listen to him. I should not pity him. And that's, by the way, the model. I want to just draw you here for a moment. Notice the model. The model of the Bible. All Christians and Jews agree that the Jewish Bible is the living word of God. That's the postulate here. That's the axiom. That's the given in this conversation. Isn't it interesting? We have a Torah. We have a tradition that's handed down to us from Sinai. And yes, we have indigenous Gentile nations that come and try to draw the Jewish people away from that Torah. Draw the Jewish people away from that line of transmission. Torah says, don't listen to it. Christians ought to, for a moment, when I say Christians, I don't mean a liberal, nice, Unitarian, a Methodist, who, I'm talking about the fundamentalist, evangelical world, they have to think for a moment. Here we have a Jewish people, we see a covenant. Most of the missionaries are dispensationalists. They believe that God has maintained that covenant, the premillennial dispensationalist, which means, it means a lot of things, but for our purposes, briefly, it means they believe that God has a two-track plan of salvation, one with the church and one with the physical seed of Abraham, and God has maintained that covenant with the physical seed of Abraham. They see the Jews and we are the seed of Abraham. Isn't it odd? Again, Jews have converted out of the faith. They have. Don't have any mistake about this. Jews have become Christians and Muslims and Buddhists. Forget about it. But they're no longer here as Jews. That seed that has managed to survive the fires of Europe is here today. And here we have you, an indigenous group that's coming out to take the Jew away from that, transmission. Think about that for a moment. That's why it says here, look at Daddy. It's a good barometer, don't you think? Someone comes along and passes your track, you read it, say, is this what my grandfather believed? Torah says, if it's different from what your Zayda believed, stay away from it, stay far away from it.